Twilight by Tuesday Lovesang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 8. In the days of long ago, when the century was yet young, Kaiser Bill stamped along his corridors in the Palace of Berlin, thinking of world conquest, thinking of all the wonders he was going to perform. Trying to conceal his defective arm, he gesticulated enormously with the other in an attempt to compensate for his physical deficiencies and deformities. Kaiser Bill was getting ready to go to England to show off the might of the German Navy at a British naval review. In a Dacca, on the outskirts of Moscow, the Tsar of all the Russias twirled his well-waxed mustache and thought of all the wonders that were going to happen in Russia. About him, the courtiers were servile, concealing from the great Tsar the truth of things as they were in Russia, concealing the truth about the growing unrest of the people, about the starvation of the peasants. The Tsar of all the Russias sent his servants scurrying about him, for he was going on a long journey all across Europe to England. In England, preparations were being made for an enormous naval review at Spithead. Heads of state were coming to see the review, and all the might of the British Navy was going to be paraded before envious eyes. The streets of London were cobbled. Horse hooves clattered enormously on the rough stone surface, and the iron-rimmed wheels of hansom cabs juddered as they crossed the uneven cobbles, jarring the passengers inside, who were suspended in their carriage only by the leather straps at each corner. The streets of London were lit largely by gas, that new fandangled thing, electricity, was taking but slow hold on the great metropolis, and cars, well, cars were not yet to be seen except as a rarity of rarities, as a spectacle that would soon set everyone's heads turning. The great London hospitals were thronged with eager, devoted young men, anxious to make a name for themselves in the new fields of medicine. In one great London hospital, an ardent young man, Dr. Kilner, studied and studied, and went in for research on that strangest of all things, which newfangled electricity would make possible? X-rays. Late into the nights, he labored trying different arrangements of voltages. Electricity provided by the immense Compton dynamos, which were then the most wonderful things to appear in the world of electrics. Electrics, because the science of electronics was not yet born. Dr. Kilner studied all manner of strange methods of investigating the human body. He found that if he used immense voltages and extremely small amperages, he could project lights from the edges of the human body. He called it testing for the aura. And then he went further in his researches and found that certain arrangements of prisms and lenses, aided by filters of special dyes, would enable him to see the aura on a nude human body. But the body had to be nude. One day, Poor Dr. Kellner was caught examining a nude woman by the light of the special lamp. No matter that the intruding doctor could see colored lights in all manner of strange shades on the screen through which Dr. Kellner looked, his research was closed down. He was hauled before the Board of Governors and the Board of Medical Directors, and he was threatened most solemnly that if he ever did research on the human body again, and in that particular field, he would be disbarred, crossed off the British Medical Association register, and who knows, with his career in shards around him, he might even end up as a laborer or as an occupant of the local workhouse. Dr. Kellner was given the option of getting out of the medical profession or obeying the orders and doing research into the dosages of the newly discovered X-ray photographic treatment. So, to mankind's lasting shame, one of the great discoverers was buried in obscurity. Dr. Kellner lapsed into mediocrity and did merely routine things in the world of X-ray. The science of aura research was lost. The Great War came, the first Great War. X-rays were used for the first time on wounded soldiers. Medical science advanced, but always in the wrong direction. The X-ray machine was not the answer. The war was won, but not by the winner. The loser, Germany, came out of it best of all. First of all, though, people trundled millions of marks along the streets of Germany. Millions of marks were needed to buy even a poor meal. The mark became devalued. There was much trouble in Germany. Russia, too, was in a state of chaos because a new party had risen, the Communist Party, the Soviet, and they were making wonderful strides in adapting the new knowledge of the West. In early 1960 and on to the 1970s, an author wrote certain things in books on metaphysics which stimulated the interest of the Russians, who were always alert for such things. Numbers of this author's books were taken to Russia and studied by avid investigators. Eventually, under state direction, certain researches were carried out in the universities of Moscow, studies which broke away from what really was the wrong type of research. X-ray was forgotten for a time in Russia, and investigators there used high voltages in an attempt to detect the magnetic field of the human body. In Russia, there was no problem about nudity. The individual did not matter. Everything was subservient to the needs of the state. In the course of time, so-called civilization went its devious way, and there was a man and a woman, husband and wife, in Russia, who worked together and managed to make a study of many systems which had been tried in the past. Eventually, these people, the Kurlians, were able to devise a modern adaptation of an old system, and by this particular system, they found they were able to obtain certain phenomena on photographic film. Now, this does not mean that the Kurlians have succeeded in photographing the human aura. Definitely they have not, because Basically, their system is so crude that it can be likened to covering a horseshoe magnet with a piece of paper, and on top of the piece of paper, sprinkling iron filings so that the lines of magnetic force would be indicated as the iron filings arrange themselves in a pattern dictated by the magnetic influence from the magnet. All the Curlians have been able to do is to make more or less clear that there are certain lines of force about everything. But once again, the Russians claim that the invention is theirs, although Nikola Tesla, who was born in 1856, made the apparatus which laid the foundation for Curlian photography. And our Nikola wasn't a Russian either. Certain authors have been to Russia and have returned with wonderful tales of the progress which Russian metaphysicians have attained. Some of these authors have written books about the matter, lauding the Russians higher than the heavens, and entirely oblivious of the fact that certain authors in the West had already written about such things and could do all that the Russians could do. One author, in particular, wrote to various lauding persons, pointing out these facts, but without ever receiving even an acknowledgement. The author sent to some of these people copies of his own books, which had been in print long before the Russians discovered all the marvels of which they wrote. Curlian photography is a false lead, just as was X-ray to Dr. Kilner. Curlian photography is merely a distorted form of corona discharge. It merely shows a certain static electric discharge or shielding of a discharge around the human body. One can have a horseshoe magnet or even a bar magnet and cover it with a piece of paper, and then if one sprinkles iron filings on the paper, one can get a form of one-dimensional impression of the magnetic field of the magnet, but that does not constitute exact knowledge of the magnet's performance, nor of its composition. It is, in fact, just a parlor trick and nothing more. In such a manner, the Curlian system, which is merely a revival of something going back 50 or 60 years, is nothing but a parlor trick, which is leading good, sound investigators far off the proper track. Curlian photography is amusing. It enables one to do parlor tricks with leaves, etc., and even in color. But then all corona discharges are in color, are they not? It's such a pity that people nowadays seem to think that anything exotic, and exotic means only foreign, must necessarily be good, better than the home product. There's an old saying which is very true to the effect that no man is a prophet in his own country. So it is that the Curlians, who have merely resurrected an old system, are getting much attention which would not matter in the slightest, except that it is sending reputable scientists off the right direction. The correct form of X-ray, which will come in time, will not be those miserable shadows that one sees on a piece of thick film. It will instead be an exact color reproduction of inside the human body. And if Dr. Kilner had not been sidetracked, He would have produced such a form of photograph because he was on the right trail. He had the knowledge which he brought down from the astral and toward the realization of which he was just fumbling. Correct X-ray. It would have been called something different at that time, of course. Would have enabled doctors and surgeons to see precisely what was happening inside the body and exactly as it was happening and in its own natural color. Then there would have been no need for exploratory operations. One would have seen instead. And if those doctors had only listened to Dr. Kilner, aura photography also would have been a commonplace, and with photography of the aura, one can tell precisely what ailments a body suffers from. And even more interesting, one can also tell with complete accuracy what ailments a body is likely to suffer from unless remedial steps were taken at an early stage. Aura photography is very real. It is very necessary to the human race. It was commonplace in the days of Atlantis. It was commonplace when the Sumerians were upon the earth, and yet, through jealousy, through spite, and through spiritual blindness, researchers with the basic knowledge have been prevented from making such apparatus. One of the greatest stumbling blocks, it seems, is that a person must be nude to be examined at the aura level, and in hospitals now, it is permissible to examine one small area of the human body while the rest is completely draped. It seems to be a crime of some sort to look upon a nude body unless they be on the beach or the stage or in the pages of some of the more pornographic magazines. But in time, X-rays as we know them today will be swept away, gone into the limbo of forgotten things. Gone, too, will be the latest gimmick, Kirlian photography, which, if it is ever mentioned as being in the past, will be, with a condescending smile, at the credulity of the stupid people of the 70s who could be taken in by such a gimmick. Kirlian photography, then, is not the answer to aura photography. It is not aura photography at all. If you go by the side of a swift flowing river and you put your hand in the water, you will find that there are ripples and disturbances of the smooth flow. Your hand has upset the even tenor of the water's flow and made itself manifest by ripples and a wake which spreads outwards. In the same way, if one has a very high voltage and a very low amperage connected to certain metal plates, and the electricity be switched on, then anything which impedes the flow of that electrostatic current will also show as ripples or specks, which are merely amusing to look at, but have no worthwhile content at all. Well, I hope that will assist some of you to form your own opinion about Kirlian photography. I have been sickened by the whole affair because I think I must have had the world's largest collection of cuttings about Kirlian photography. People have cut out loads of articles and have sent them on to me. Some of these people, in fact, have such big parcels of cuttings and articles that they felt I should be honored to pay the postage, and so they've sent off these things, and I've had to pay double postage on things I knew all about. That reminds me that some time ago, a man in St. Catharines, Ontario, I think he must have been mental or something, loaded up boxes with the most awful junk of magazines and paperbacks that he could lay his hands on, and he sent them all to me, postage forward. Well, in those days I was younger and more innocent than I am now, so I took in those things after paying a very considerable charge for special delivery, special handling, and all the rest of it, and I found that the stuff he had sent me, unsolicited, was muck. But he didn't get away with it. He made one little mistake in which I could see that he had been doing, of which his company would thoroughly disapprove. So I got in touch with the company and sent the evidence to them. And, well, I had a letter of apology and of thanks from the company concerned, and I had no trouble whatever with that smart aleck who thought he was going to get a rise out of me. But in case anyone else is inclined to send me stuff collect, save yourself the trouble, because I do not accept anything now collect. I have had people try to telephone me from all over the USA who thought I was foolish enough to accept collect telephone calls or collect telegrams. Well, they had to think again. I have also stopped giving my telephone number to people because when I was in Vancouver, I found I was getting extraordinarily high telephone bills, and I just could not understand what I was being charged for calls to other cities for. And so the matter was investigated. It was found that a near neighbor who knew my telephone number had been giving it to the operator when he was making long-distance calls. Nice fellow, eh? Well, he didn't get away with it either. But now, here are some more questions and some more answers. A question here says, it's 5 years now since you wrote Beyond the Tenth, in which you said that it may be necessary for the gardeners of the earth to step in and shake things, and us humans, up, so that we realize what a mess we've made of this planet. Well, things are steadily getting worse, as you said. Communism is spreading rapidly, and unions are gaining what will amount to complete control of many countries fairly soon. In the light of this, can you tell us if we are going to get a well-deserved kick in the pants within the next 30 or 40 years? Yes, my friend, but first of all, the gardeners of the earth do not want to interfere if humans will pick themselves up and put themselves on the right path. Because if the gardeners of the earth have to come in, then there will be drastic measures taken. And they don't want that any more than we want it. In my opinion, the world will become communist just about everywhere, and people will have a very bad time indeed, and not until people have had such a bad time and have shaken themselves out of it will they be able to straighten up and take the upward swing of the pendulum, which, in the course of time, will lead to the Golden Age. I've got a P.S. here, and it reads, can you please explain the relationship and or difference of hypnosis to meditation? And is hypnosis a worthwhile endeavor for overcoming bad habits or problems? Actually, there is no relationship at all between meditation and hypnosis. In meditation, one is completely under one's own control, able to send one's intellect soaring out to other dimensions. Mind you, I am talking about meditation, none of that cult nonsense for which one pays a lot of money and gets nothing in return. It's my firm belief that the only meditation worthwhile is that which is done alone, because just think of people. Everyone has an aura, and the aura can extend quite away from the body. So if you get a whole bunch of people together, then you get auras jamming the meditation processes of others. In my opinion, you cannot truly or satisfactorily meditate in a group. In hypnosis, one surrenders control to oneself, to another person, and I maintain it weakens one's self-control. After all, you want to be you, don't you? You don't want to be mixed up with, let us say, Bill Dog's body. You know what your name is, you know what you are, you know what you'd like to be. You like your own privacy, and so why should you possibly want to get hypnotized, which is a process under which you surrender part of your privacy to another person? No, I am against hypnotism, dead against it. It's such a harmful thing. You get, for example, a stage hypnotist who says that he will cure a certain person of a certain complaint. Well, he doesn't do that. If he is a hypnotist, he can undoubtedly influence the person to hide or disguise the symptoms of the illness. And then, if the symptoms are disguised, how can one expect that even the most intelligent doctor will find out that from which the person suffers? By the time the victim has been hypnotized for a certain period, then the illness usually is quite incurable. So my strong advice is, never allow yourself to be hypnotized unless it is by a fully qualified medical practitioner who has also been trained in hypnotic practices and techniques. As a doctor, he will have taken note of your symptoms. As a hypnotist, he will know how to channel those symptoms into any worthwhile path possible. Remember that a doctor takes an oath to give one relief from pain and to do no evil. Well, our friend John Biggrass and the two Biggrass cats have gone roaring off to Banff and on to Vancouver. I have been out twice since coming home from hospital, two little visits to the outskirts of the city, two little trips when I could look out over the city from the foothills leading to the Rockies. Now I suppose, once again, I am a shut-in, stuck here mainly in one room, in a bed or in a wheelchair. Cars are very useful things, but I do not have one. Anyway, they are far too expensive on an author's income, as I have told the income tax people when they tried to deny me an income tax allowance on the purchase of an electric wheelchair. Well, one doesn't have a wheelchair for pleasure, but only because it is essential. I told them that with my disabilities, I should really be on welfare. Instead of that, I work at writing books to make myself independent of welfare. But instead of the income tax people giving me any concessions, they try to deduct the last penny they can. For instance, I paid my income tax, and then from one department I got a note saying that my income tax was all clear. The very next day, I got another note from another department saying I had to pay a fine because I had paid my tax once a year instead of every 3 to 6 months. So people who work as bricklayers or navvies or cab drivers or anything like that are far better off tax-wise than I am, because the income tax people soak me the limit and beyond. And I often wonder at the mentality and personality of these people who can be income tax collectors and batten on the troubles of disabled people. However, that's not answering questions, is it? And that is what this book is supposed to be. So let's get on with the unending pile of questions. They grow, you know. I have enough questions here for 10 or 20 books, and yesterday I had a whole bunch of quite abstract metaphysical questions sent on from Brazil. Is it important enough for the inhabitants of this plane to know more of the other planes of existence beyond the astral? If so, could you elucidate on them, perhaps give us at least a sketchy idea of the structure of the planes of existence? Also, what happens when a spirit evolves to the plane below that of the highest, or that of God? Can a spirit actually evolve to the highest plane, or is that too preposterous to even discuss? Well, it is only possible to discuss the plane above, the astral, and it is much like this world, although it has another dimension. Time, for instance, is not at all the same as it is on this world. Travel is different, too. If you want to get to a place, you think yourself there. You might be sitting down looking out across the landscape and feel that you would like to call on a friend who might be a certain distance away. Well, if you think of the friend and think of his location, then almost imperceptibly you'll find yourself there with your friend. Nor will you find in the astral world prudishness or pornography. When you get to the astral world, you find, to your considerable astonishment at first, that you are as bare as a peeled banana, and you have quite literally to think up any form of clothing which takes your fancy. But after a time, well, you find that these things do not matter. The things of the spirit count more, and that is not as a pun either. In the astral plane, you cannot meet people with whom you are antagonistic, And of course, the higher you go, the more compatible you are with the people around you. Now, you can usually get up to about the ninth plane of existence, and then you no longer find that the Overself is sending out puppets. Instead, there is only one extension from the Overself after the ninth plane. Of course, there are a vast number of planes of existence, and you go on and on, getting more and more dimensions. But there would be no point in trying to discuss some of these other dimensions unless you've been there, because there's no point of reference. How would you, for example, discuss atomic theory with an ant who was more interested in getting on with the ordinary business of day-to-day living? How could you discuss nuclear thermoelectrics with a bee who was far more interested in going in and collecting pollen, or whatever it is they collect, so that the process of making honey could continue? No. Until you have had experience of other dimensions, you're not able to discuss them. It's like having a year-old baby trying to discuss brain surgery with one of our leading surgeons. But there is no limit to how high you can go. Remember the old saying that there is always plenty of room at the top of the ladder. And, you see, God is not an old gentleman with a beard and a shepherd's crook who comes along and hooks in all the wayward lambs. God is a different thing altogether. Nothing that you can understand down here. Here, your nearest conception of a God is a menu, that is, one of the branch managers who looks after this particular department store which we call Earth. And under him, he has a lot of assistant managers who look after continents and lands and cities. They seem to have made a pretty poor show of it of late, don't they? Think of all the commotion in America, in Cambodia, in Vietnam, in the Middle East, and now in Cyprus. I think all these menus should be sent back to take a special postgraduate course or something. But anyway, that's getting away from the subject. So the answer is that you can go as high as your capacity will allow. And there is no reason at all why you should not reach the top and reach Buddhahood. That is what Buddhism is about, anyway. Question: can we, of this physical plane, learn of and effectively use astrology for the good of the living? If so, what is the true source of astrological teachings? Many, many years ago, astrology was extraordinarily accurate because it was founded on a new science, the influence of the stars on objects of this earth. Humans, animals, plants, etc., had been predicated, and those assumptions were accurate so long as the zodiac remained as it was when the assumptions were made. Now, a few thousand years later, the zodiac is different, and the predictions, the forecasts, are all wrong. I personally believe that astrology, as it is in the West nowadays, is just a waste of time. It is utterly inaccurate for the simple reason that no allowance has been made for the difference in the configuration of the zodiac. In the very Far East, such allowances have been made, and the horoscopes there are very, very much more accurate. I know this. Everything that was predicted for me by astrologers in the very Far East has come true. Every darn thing. I have had my horoscope done several times in the West, and each time the predictions could hardly have been more incorrect. They might have been doing a horoscope for a different person. Their efforts have proved to be ludicrous. So I always tell people that in my considered opinion, and based on my own experience with astrologers in the West, it's just a waste of time to have one's horoscope done. People are always writing to me, asking that I should do their horoscope, and at least one incarnation. I always refuse, because to do a proper horoscope takes a very considerable time, and I don't have that time. I've been offered quite remarkable sums of money to do a horoscope, but I always, without exception, refuse. People seem vastly interested in getting at least one incarnation told. But why? If people are on this earth, now living through this life, what does it matter what they were in the past? All that matters is what they are now and what they're going to be in the future. And if a person just squanders time thinking about the glories of the past, etc., etc., ad lib, then they end up with a chip on their shoulder and think, "Oh, I was Cleopatra's grandmother in the last life, and now look at me. What am I? A cleaning lady." Hey, I like this one. The question is, do you have an opinion on the martial arts? Is it possible for Americans to study the form of judo, karate, or whatever the martial form was that you were taught in Tibet? In the Far East, the martial arts, so-called, were not for the purpose of disabling people, nor were they for defense. They were instead designed as a mental, mystical, and spiritual discipline. After all, the more colorful you are, the more your conscience tells you to be gentle. The more you've been trained about the body, the more you can look after your own body. So people who think they're going to take a correspondence course in judo, for instance, and then beat up the bully who kicks sand at them when they're at the beach, well, they're in for a shock. For instance, I do not think that these arts can be taught properly by correspondence, nor by any young punk who thinks he is going to set up a physical training school. There's more to it than that. There is always the danger, too, that you try to disable someone who is perhaps 10 or 20 lessons ahead of you, as I've stated previously in this book. You could, indeed, collect your lumps that way. So my recommendation is that going in for this martial arts stunt is useless if you want it just for defense. No judo or karate is useful against a gun, is it? especially when the bullet is already speeding towards you. Well, Kathy Porter, I'm going to answer your questions. Sorry, I have already answered some of them, but I will answer another one. It is it wise to pray to our Overself for direction or guidance, and that things, mainly of the occult and spiritual, be revealed to us as we can accept and understand them? Yes, Kathy, you can always pray to your Overself. Your Overself knows everything that has ever happened to the Overself. Look at it like this. You are employed here, where shall we say, America? And your big boss is living in, oh, let's say, Sydney, Australia. Now, if you want to get in touch with your boss, you have to use a letter or a telephone. But let's cut out the letter, because you can't send a letter to your Overself. And your big boss is the equivalent of your Overself. So that leaves us with the telephone. And if you've ever tried to telephone halfway across the world, you'll have discovered that it is a frustrating, time-wasting, patience-consuming experience. And then, half the words you might have to guess. Your subconscious is like a librarian. The librarian doesn't need to know much herself. Her chief value is in that she knows where to find certain information. So a librarian can be consulted about any problem. And if she is a good librarian, she can tell you just where to look, what type of a book will give the information that you need. She will also tell you where the book is on the library shelf. The subconscious is like that. The subconscious is a pretty dim sort of individual, but he or she knows exactly how to get the information you want. So, if you get in touch with your subconscious, you will find you get results far more quickly than if you waste energy trying to contact your Overself. It is much quicker to look up a thing in your local library than to telephone somebody in Australia or Timbuktu or Tuscaloosa or somewhere else. There is a very modest lady who lives in Barcelona, Spain. She has some questions, but she prefers not to have her name mentioned. So I will just give my greetings to Signora D and answer some questions from her. Are the forerunners of the New World Leader already making propaganda or preparing for him? Even according to the Christian Bibles, this is a time, Revelations, when there shall be false prophets. In other words, translated into modern day language, this poor old world of ours is in a horrible mess. All the standards and values are tumbling down around us, and there is always some smart aleck ready to make a fast buck by pretending to be a world leader. So it is, we sometimes find that some people with ample money will sponsor a young punk and pretend that he's the new messiah, or the new god, or something else, and these moneyed men who hunger more and more and more for money will put on quite a show with all the theatrical trappings, jet planes, fast cars, etc., trying to delude the unwary or the ignorant into paying money to join a special movement. After a time, the young punk grows up a bit and he wants a say in his own affairs, and unless the moneyed people can control him, he does things which his followers find incompatible with his professed aims. Sometimes, too, the fellow goes to another country and the tax collectors of the country seize a few of his millions, or won't let him out of the country until he does pay a few millions. Sometimes the fellow will go around and find that his aircraft has been seized because it wasn't his, and it's been taken out of the country. My own strong recommendation is that no one be taken in by these cultists, these advertising people who claim that they, and only they, are the true God, the new Messiah, the new leader, the guru of all gurus, etc., etc. You want to look behind a facade and ask yourself, well, what are these people getting out of it? Why all the big advertisements? And if they were genuine, they wouldn't need to advertise. People would still know and would come flocking to his holy banner. Cults? Those who form cults are, in my opinion, the scum of the earth, because they lead away the gullible and deny them a chance of really getting knowledge. Hey, I'm getting fierce, aren't I? You didn't know I could be fierce in my old age, did you? Never mind. It's a good thing to let off steam sometimes, because if I can shock some of you into staying away from the cults, then it will be to the good of your own spiritual health. One writer says, "It is a shame that we don't know more about those extraordinary men, the Lama Mingyur Dondup and the great 13th Dalai Lama." The Lama Mingyur Dondup is indeed a great entity who is now, of course, far beyond the earth sphere. He's not incarnated, but is instead on a much higher plane of existence, and he is actually trying to help other worlds, plural. He is not concentrating solely on this earth, but on a whole group of inhabited worlds where they are having trouble, where selfishness is growing like weeds in a garden. Some of us true lamas believe that the great 13th was the last of the Dalai Lamas. We believe that if the present incumbent to that office had been a true Dalai Lama, he would have done more to help the people of Tibet. After all, when a man just says he is a religious leader and he's praying, well, anyone can pray. It needs more than a few prayers to free a country from communist aggressors, communist invaders. It needs an actual physical example. It might even mean martyrdom for a leader of a country, because if a leader of a country stays and fights with his people, and sometimes force is justified, then his people will not be faint-hearted when they have a well-loved leader to lead them. The great 13th was such a man, one who would have stayed with his people. But you can't fight against death, can you? End of chapter 8.